Welcome back to the Abner Podcast. I'm your host, Freeway. I'm here with my co-host, Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender, Netflix live adaptation. But before we get into that, I do want to give Kenny a chance to talk about how he's feeling, because right before we got on cam, he was telling me that he was briefly in a hospital. So I just want, you know, we like to be transparent on this podcast sometimes with certain things. And yeah, Kenny had an experience this past
week. No, you're invading my privacy, Fraser. I didn't know this was going to be public information.
Listen, if I share my name, nothing.
Anyway.
God, what happened?
My ass was leaking. And, you know, if you guys heard one of the previous episodes, there was a lot of talk about my butt.
Was a lot of talk about, and comments about your butt, too.
So, yeah, hey, you know, it's hairy if you want to know. So, on to serious. My jaw is in a lot of pain. I don't know what, neither do the doctors. I woke up a couple days ago. When you're hearing this, who knows how many days ago it was. But I woke up a couple days ago and my jaw was in a lot of pain. It was like locked up, lock jaw, is what, you know, a lot of people call it. But my jaw was all just locked up. It was in a ton of pain, super, super tense. What I personally think it is, I'll get to that in a second, actually, because first thing Fraser asked was, are you doing hard drugs?
I didn't know you were going to bring. All right. We're one for one now, because I didn't even want to fucking bring up the question that I asked you. Hey. Now you just telling them a question I asked you.
Hey. And then, so no, the answer is no, I don't do drugs. But anyway, yeah, a lot of pain. And I was scared because I was thinking, like, dude, what happened? Like, nothing happened. I didn't get hit in the face. Like, nothing happened. Why? And like a week or two ago, my neck was in a lot of pain because I slept on my, you know, when you guys sleep wrong and your neck hurts. And I was like, well, I've never slept wrong and my jaw hurts, right? Like I woke up, like, you know what I mean? Like that's not what happened.
Unless you got trigger warning, raped by a ghost in your sleep, but.
That'd have been wild. But so yeah, just in a lot of pain. I don't know what's going on. So I'm just thinking. And then I got scared. I was like, oh shit. Cause I remember hearing about tetanus, and that tetanus, one of the early signs of it is lockjaw. And about a week prior, I had stepped on something and I got a splinter. I didn't think anything of it. It's like, whatever. I've had a million splinters in my life, moved on with my life. It was hard to walk for a little bit, but then like the pain kind of went away. I got scared. I was like, oh man, maybe like I got tetanus from that.
So splinter. For people who don't know, what is tetanus? Because I just thought it was a character in Final Fantasy X. So like what actually, do you know what it is?
Tetanus,
because doesn't that the shit you get from like a dog? Don't they say when a dog bites, you got to get a tetanus shot or something like
rabies?
Oh, okay.
That's rabies.
By the way, guys, we are not medical professionals on the I Am Nerd podcast at all. So we don't know fuck about shit.
I'm going to just give you the most I can give you off the top of my head. I'm not a doctor. Tetanus, as far as I know, growing up, you always hear about it. Like if you were to accidentally step like on a rusty nail.
Yeah, right?
And that's like, what you got to get it. You got to get a tetanus shot. Or like, did you get your tetanus shot? There's no cure for tetanus. It's something that you need to have the shot beforehand, and then if you get it, they can give you medication to help like alleviate all the symptoms and hopefully you survive. But if you get tetanus and you don't get any help, it has a 20% mortality rate from what I read. So
which
one
is
in five,
insane, by the way. Mm-hmm. A 1 in 5 chance that you just die from getting tetanus. So 1 in 5 people who gets it and it goes untreated just die.
Yep. So, and once again, there is no actual cure. You need the shot, blah blah blah. So anyway, I was really fucking worried. I was like, holy shit. Like, I hope I don't have tetanus, because like I did step on something about a week ago and now my jaw's all locked up. And oh, to explain what tetanus is, I don't fully know what it is, but I know it's like a toxin. And so you step on something, you get it. And it's a toxin that spreads through your body. And one of the first signs of it is your jaw locking up, getting locked jaw.
So that's why you
thought, one of the next signs, and it's like the toxin is spreading through your body and then like it locks your jaw up. You start getting muscle spasms. And then eventually you get like a fever and some other things, and then you die. So that's tetanus.
okay.
Anyway, I was worried. I go to the doctor, try to find out what it is. They don't know. They do some stuff. They do some stuff and they determine it's like they're 90% sure it's not tetanus. Not 100% though. 90% sure it's not tetanus.
I hate these percentages, by the way. I do not like these percentages. Like when you're talking about my life, I don't like these percentages. Like give me some fucking 99.9s. Give me some
life. Percentages aren't good. They're not good. So not tetanus. They do various tests and checks and blah, blah, blah. They can't figure out what's wrong. But they have like an idea. They think maybe it's like some kind of infection. They give me some antibiotics and they also give me Valium, a prescription of Valium that I haven't taken. I was in a lot of pain. I'm still in pain now. Not as much as I was, but I was in a lot of pain. But I'm very against like hard fucking painkillers. Like,
yeah, Kenny and I both do not take them. I was prescribed, was it Oxycontin when I got my wisdom teeth removed? I've been prescribed Vicodin, and I've been prescribed, I think, Valium as well at one point in my life for just various dental work that I've had done or just whatever. Mm-hmm. And I never take it. In fact, this is weird, but like I still have all the pill bottles in my room just like stored away because I always put them in a drawer and say like, oh, maybe I'll need this. Now, they're all sure they're all expired because the last time I got my wisdom teeth taken out was before the pandemic. So it's over 4 years now. But I typically just get the prescription, put it away, and never take it because I'm just afraid of taking opioids and like you said, hard mm-hmm. drugs, even if it's medication. I just don't. I'm just kind of against it. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't take the Valium. I have it. I don't plan on taking it. I am taking the normal medication that's actually for if I have an infection or whatever. That said, kind of what I think it might be, though, and I got to, like, go see my normal doctor. I think it's arthritis, which also would suck. But I, occasionally, like, I'll wake up, not all the time, but I'll wake up and my fingers will be locked up. Like, my fingers will be really, really tight and really, really tense. And so I'm self-diagnosed. I think I have arthritis. I haven't had it actually checked out, but, like, I'll wake up and my fingers will be really tense and locked up and it'll hurt. It'll be a lot of pain to just move them. And then so this kind of, I woke up and doctors don't really find anything wrong. And so I kind of think maybe I have arthritis in my fucking jaw.
Can I ask a question?
Too, which would suck.
Because now you brought up a new topic for me that just, you know, this is the Iron Nerd podcast. So we like to go on tangents.
Yeah.
Have you ever slept on like your arm or anything?
And you wake up with your arm asleep?
Your arm is just like completely dead.
Completely numb. Yeah.
And it feels like the arm could just fall off or come off mm-hmm. super easy. Because like the arm is just, there's no blood flow in it whatsoever.
It won't move. Like it's fucked.
And it's like, like it's just like mm-hmm. it's just like hanging off your body, kind of like one of your arms is just dead hanging off your body, and you wake up in the middle of the night and you just try to like you spend the next 3 minutes making sure that it functions again. Because the first time it ever happened to me, I woke up literally my arm, and then I realized that nothing was actually wrong. I just had to get blood flow back. No. But the first time was terrifying.
There's a funny story about that too. For those of you that know Cheyenne, the first time it ever happened to him, Medina was at his house, right? And so Medina was spending the night at Cheyenne's house. Medina is my old roommate, also Fraser's old roommate, not same roommate at the same time, but anyway. Medina was at Cheyenne's house. Cheyenne wakes up in the middle of the night and like shakes Medina awake. He's like, Medina, Medina, my arm doesn't work. He's like, Medina, my arm doesn't work. I don't know what to do. And he's like, call 911. Medina's like, what are you talking about? And then he's like flopping his arm around.
And I would like, call him a fucking idiot, but I also had the exact same experience.
Medina's like,
just alone.
Medina did say, he's like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, your arm's asleep. He's like, no, man. No, like, my legs, they've been never like this. And he's just like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, your arm's asleep. Like, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And he was like, freaking out. He's like, please help.
Mind you, as he's freaking out, his arm is slowly regaining its normalcy.
Yeah.
Like, you know how when you wake up like that, obviously at first it's completely dead because whatever way you were sleeping on, it just cut the circulation. But the second you start to like move around, you mm-hmm. start to get the blood flow back. You can start to wiggle your fingers a little bit. And then eventually you can just full out make a fist. And that's my experience. Now when it happens, I don't really freak out. I do get kind of annoyed because I'm like, why did I fucking sleep on my arm again? But
yeah.
Very
worse though, because to my memory, it never like hurts. For whatever reason, like when my leg falls asleep, like if I'm just sitting down playing a game,
yeah,
my leg falls asleep, it's to the point where it never feels as bad as when your arm's just dead, but my leg will just hurt. Like it'll be in so much pain, like the tingling feeling from it falling asleep.
It's a ticklish thing
to
me.
Like for my legs, it causes pain, but for my arms, it's always just like numb and it's just like a dead arm. And then like eventually it kind of comes back, but it doesn't really hurt. So I don't know.
Yeah, for me, I definitely have the legs fall asleep thing all the time, especially when I'm gaming or just doing something on my laptop. My laptop's on my legs and I'm just kind of chilling. I can stay like mm-hmm. that. You know, I can stay in a single position for hours. I sit cross-legged a lot. And yeah, so oftentimes my legs will fall asleep, but it's very ticklish for me when I try to get feeling back. And then walking is scary because it feels like you're going to fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you try to walk, especially downstairs, I grab onto the railing every time because walking downstairs with no feeling in your leg is like really scary, but
a little risky. But yeah, I mean, so that's been my adventures. I don't know what it is. My jaw still hurts, but doesn't hurt as bad. You know, I've taken some medicine. I guess that's working. And but the day it happened, I couldn't eat. Like I went out and bought like four things of applesauce because
see that would bother me.
Yeah, I couldn't eat because first when I woke up, it was in pain. And I was just like, I tend to do this a lot, which probably isn't a good thing, but I just kind of go like, whatever, I'll deal with it. Yeah. Like it'll go away eventually. And so like, it was in pain, but it wasn't too bad. But then I went to go eat a bowl of cereal and I went to go open my mouth wider than you have to do when you're just normally talking. So I went to go open my mouth wider to like put a spoon in my mouth. And then that hurt a lot, opening my mouth up. And then like, I was like, once again, I was like, whatever, I'll just try to open my mouth not as wide. But then I tried chewing. And then there was an intense, because like I'm straining my fucking mouth. Like it doesn't want to move and it's like all locked up. And when I started chewing, it like was an unbearable pain. And then from there, it like radiated the pain for the rest of the day, even when I wasn't using my mouth at all. So
I can,
it was really annoying.
The way you're describing it, I can actually kind of feel it.
Yeah. So it was frustrating. And then on one end, I was like, it's probably nothing and it's probably a waste of my time to like go to the ER. I was like, but if it is something like tetanus, like I'm just not rolling that dice. And so I'm just going to go. So
yeah, makes sense. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you're feeling better. I had no idea that this happened until literally 10 minutes before the podcast started. So just figure something that we talk about on the show. It's interesting. Like, I would love to hear if you guys have had any experiences with either a tetanus shot, lockjaw, the thing where your arm goes asleep when you are asleep because you slept on it for some reason, things like that. If you have any, even when you're sitting on the toilet too long and your legs go to sleep, which is a thing that happens to me a lot when I bring my iPad or my Switch into the bathroom.
I basically always sleep on my arm. My arm doesn't always fall asleep though. That's the weird part.
That is the weird part because I do sleep on my arm pretty much every, I put my pillow on top of my arm and then I kind of like cradle my head. And that's one of my prime sleeping, but that's one of the main ways that I get good sleep.
That's like one of my three.
Yep.
And I do it all the time. But then sometimes you just wake up. It's the same thing when you wake up and your neck hurts. And it's like, I guess I slept wrong, but I slept the same way I always sleep.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck happened. Think so. I move in my sleep. So I can't really say that the way I went to sleep is the way I necessarily stayed, because that's not the case.
Yeah.
I move. Yeah. I personally have been told that I'm a wild sleeper ever since I was young. Like I will be on one side of the bed. I'll end up on the other side of the bed. I'll end up halfway off the bed. Sometimes I actually end up off the bed. This doesn't happen anymore as an adult. But when I was a kid, I used to literally end up halfway hanging off or literally on the floor or like sprawled in a completely different direction than I started. Just weird shit. Like I used to sleep so much wilder. Now I do at least wake up facing the same way and stuff like that. But my position that I go, if I sleep with my back, when I wake up, sometimes I'll be on my stomach. When I sleep with my stomach, sometimes I'll wake up, I'll be on my back. Sometimes I sleep on my side and I'll wake up on my back, etc. So
yeah,
wild sleeper. Okay, so that's that. Guys, write in if you have anything to say about that. Have you experienced anything, you know, interesting about the way you sleep, sometimes incorrectly, your neck pain and stuff like that. We love to hear those kind of listener letters. imtherepodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's imtherepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, moving right along. So we spent about a little over 10 minutes on that. Let's talk about Avatar finally.
Avatar, Netflix live adaptation.
Yeah, we're only going to cover the first four episodes because that's all I've seen. I believe Kenny has seen all eight.
Yeah, I've seen all of it. I watched it basically when it came out.
It came out when I was in Vegas. I've seen all of it. For YCS Vegas. I believe that was the exact weekend that it came out. So for me, it was kind of hard because Vegas is just debauchery the whole time. So I didn't really get a chance to watch it until very recently. But I watched the first four episodes. And because I watched the original, even the next four episodes technically aren't going to be like spoilers for me or anything like that, unless they severely change something. I don't know if they did, but there are things that are different in this new adaptation or whatever. So let me just start off by saying this. I've been looking at a lot of the reviews for the show as a whole, which does definitely cover all eight. Again, I'm not really worried about getting spoiled for an adaptation, though. It's like if somebody said the Death Note live adaptation did this, this, and this, I wouldn't be like, oh man, you spoiled it for me, because like I know the story of Death Note. So even if you know, so I did watch reviews on YouTube. I did read reviews as well that just talked about things on the show, but I only watched the first four. So we're going to try to keep it condensed to the first four episodes. But I want to say overall, I don't think that this show is awful. A lot of the reviews though are saying that it's fucking terrible. And like for me, that just seems like a gross exaggeration. It seems like the internet doing that thing that they like to do, where it's like groupthink and everybody just kind of piles on something. Like they did this with Eternals. Kenny and I both watched that movie. We reviewed it on this podcast and we were both like, this movie's fine. Like,
yeah,
it's just fine. Like the movie's fine. Like out of all the Marvel movies, the Eternals for me is one that I would literally watch again. And I did when we had to review it. So like
actually out of like the newer set of Marvel movies, like
God, they're so bad now. Marvel's terrible now. Yeah. Eternals is fine. So when it came to Avatar, I was like, oh, I don't know. People are saying it's really bad. And then when I watched it, episode one, I just was like, I don't think that this is nearly as bad as they're making it out to be. Is it perfect? No, but no live adaptation is. The same way I felt about like One Piece, I think One Piece is also just fine. Like, I don't think that it's fucking terrible. It's a show that I would watch One Piece season one again. I'd watch this Avatar again, to be honest. Like, it's really just not that bad to me. What I will say, because of course it's not perfect, it is beyond cringe at times. But I think that, and this is the same thing with the One Piece thing, I think because Avatar is a very campy show, if you really think about the essence of the original Avatar on Nickelodeon, right, that show is campy as hell. The way Aang is always super jovial and hyperactive and smiley all the time, the way Sokka is always like sexist and ridiculous and kind of stupid, it's always over the top. Every character in the show, Azula, fucking psycho, like the was Fire Lord's son, Zuko. Zuko is like hell-bent on proving himself to his father. Every character in the original Avatar, if you really think about it, they're not real people. They're extreme. They're all so over the top, one track, like super, super over the top, insane, not real person type of characteristics. So, and the same thing with One Piece. Sanji in original One Piece, like if you've read the manga, if you watched the anime, Sanji is so insanely perverted, so ridiculously over the top about women. Like, he's not a real, that's not a real person. So when you see that when you see it translated to a live adaptation and they stick pretty true to like what those characters are, which is campy, because that's kind of definition. It's just like, you know, over the top characteristics. When it comes to a live adaptation, it will come off a little bit like cringe to see that from a human being and not a cartoon is what I'm trying to get at. I don't fault the series for being campy, because I think that Avatar is just a campy show from what I remember. Now, I haven't seen it in over 10 years, but I did not forget the ridiculousness of the characters. Like, they're just, it's a good show because they're ridiculous. Like, Bumi's not a fucking real person, bro. Like, when you meet Bumi in the cartoon, Bumi's in, first of all, he's over 100 years old. The guy's over 100 years. He's over 100 years old. And there's a point I want to talk about that with Earthbenders, because I think it would be really cool if one of the abilities of Earthbenders, you know how in Korra, all the benders had like these extra levels to them? One of them was like flight when it came to airbenders. You had the one girl who could do like combustion lasers and shit like that with firebending. There's metal bending and water bending. There's blood bending. And there's all types of weird permeations of bending that can happen at advanced levels that is really fucking cool to me. And I was wondering, like, Bumi lived for over 100 years, and then it started making me think of earthbending, and maybe like one of the mutations of earthbending is that not flat out immortality, but extremely long lifespan. It's just like one of the things that could happen. That would be just like cool to me. And I was thinking of it as I was watching the show. I was thinking about it. But back on point, like, Bumi is not a real person, right? Like, he's just not. Even like, again, the rock candy thing, he put Aang through all these ridiculous things, and like, he's kind of a little off his rocker, but these aren't, they're cartoon characters being adapted to a live action, not the other way around. Like, they start off as a cartoon. They're literally cartoon characters. The villains are cartoonish. Like, Zuko is a cartoon villain. That is the definition of a not real villain, right? Like, they're just so over the top. So to me, I'm watching and I'm like, yes, the lines, the dialogue, not the best, but the things that they do right, personally, and Kenny, I don't know how Kenny feels about any of the things that I'm saying yet, so I would love to hear what you have to say, but I think
I'm letting you go, yeah. And then I'm gonna go next.
I think the things they do right, I think that the bending is actually really cool looking. Like, I genuinely think that the Netflix spent $120 million or something like that on this show. It was $15 million an episode for 8 episodes, so it's expensive. Christ. Yes, way too expensive. Eight. I think the same thing, Kenny. Way, like, Christ.
I feel like every goddamn time a Netflix show comes out, they're like, yeah, and we spent Game of Thrones' entire budget on one episode.
Well, that's what's happening now, because I guess it's just more expensive because they have to pay people more money or whatever, or like production costs just went up. But yes, you are right. For the production of season 4 of Game of Thrones, it's like half of these shows that come out nowadays. And these shows that come out nowadays aren't nearly as good as Game of Thrones season 4.
No.
For people who are wondering what season 4 is, that's the trial by combat with Tyrion and the mountain and all that stuff. That's where Tywin dies at the end of the season. Stuff like that. It's an amazing season. Like every other season of Game of Thrones, for the first like 5 or 6 are just amazing. But back to the point, like, I think the animation on the like CG for the bending is good. I saw people complaining saying that there isn't enough bending. That's just false. The original Avatar adaptations from way back in the day, like the M. Night Shyamalan one, and The Last Airbender, those adaptations are terrible. And it took like 6 Earthbenders to send one rock flying, if you remember.
I remember.
The first scene in this adaptation is like an Earthbender running around, I guess, in the Fire Lord's area, doing all this crazy earthbending, and then there's all this crazy firebending, and every episode has had consistent bending throughout, and it looks decent. Is it perfect? No, but it looks good. Like, it looks good enough to me. So the bending, I think, is fine. I think that the fight and choreography is like, it's decent. Like it I mean, honestly, some of the moves are taken straight from the show. The fucking whip kicks that the firebenders do, like that thing where they do like a whip kick with their feet and it sends out a lash of fire, right?
Yep.
That stuff is straight from the show. A lot of the stuff that I saw, I was like, oh, even down to the way that Aang literally does airbending, a lot of it is taken directly from the show. And I love the way they incorporated that part from the intro where he's on a little ball of wind. He kind of like
he fucking flies into the statue
when he's showing off to the water tribe, right? He's showing off to Wolf Cove. He's showing the kids that, and they found a way to incorporate something from the original show into an episode that I thought was really cool. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, that's fucking awesome. It just happens in the background and you know what it is if you watch the original. So like, to me, they hit on some of the things about it, but there's definitely faults. But that's kind of just what I wanted to say. Like, I don't think the show is all, I don't think it's a 5 out of 10. Like, I don't know. But
so, to jump on, I think I mostly agree with a lot of what you said. I'll give kind of like my side of it all.
Yeah.
I also heard a lot of people just kind of say it's fucking horrible and that it sucks and blah, 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 and it's terrible. And I was just really confused because I don't think it's great, but I did legitimately enjoy watching like every episode I watched. There was stuff about it that was bad, and I'll get to some of those things. Like one thing, for example, Fraser already kind of touched on it. In terms of the dialogue, it was like kind of cringy at times. And also just like, I think in addition to it being an adaptation of a cartoon and it being easier to get certain things across in a cartoon with the dialogue in terms of the campiness, I also just think that some of the dialogue would have been better and is better in the cartoon, even aside from being cartoon, it just was delivered badly. Like some of it is just stilted. Like some of the acting is just bad.
And yeah,
to be fair, they're child actors. Yep. Like, but some of the acting is just straight up bad. And like, it could have been better. But I don't know. I just didn't, like, I saw it and I was like, oh wow, that was bad. But I kind of like had a laugh at it. And I don't know. It didn't really bother me that much. But some of the acting is bad. Some of the line delivery is just bad. But overall, the story and the plot and what they show, I think, is fine. On the note of the bending and the fights, I think are actually really good.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they're not perfect. Some of them have some flaws, but the fucking episode one,
bro,
when they show,
can we talk
about firebenders invade?
Because we never got to see
insane.
That.
Insane. Like,
Kenny. So this is why I messaged you as I'm watching episode one. Like, I started messaging Kenny on Discord, and I do this with every show. Basically, I just annoy Kenny while I'm watching it.
I don't get annoyed. I want the record straight. I love it.
I started messaging Kenny as I'm watching the air nomads be massacred, because this is not canonically in the original cartoon. You do not get to see.
They don't show it like this. No.
No, you just know that the Fire Nation attacked. You don't get to see them murdered. So watching episode one of this Netflix adaptation, I was actually thrilled, but also disturbed by how brutal it was. But it makes sense because it's a genocide. And genocide is unsightly. It's hard to watch a genocide. Watching Schindler's List is fucking hard. Even to this day,
brutal.
It's really hard to watch a genocide happen. I don't care if it's fantasy or whatever, or nonfiction. It's still hard to watch a genocide, right? So as I'm watching episode one, I'm looking at the graphics. At the time, it's a lot of adult actors because the air nomads are all grown except Aang. So I'm like, okay, I don't really see the issue yet. Like, Aang is Aang. You know, he seems like himself. He's a little bit more muted than real Aang in the cartoon, for sure.
Yeah. The other thing I don't, just as a, on that note, the other thing that's like, and we can talk more about it as we go, but something that really did frustrate me about Aang, though, is that throughout the entire season, but for the first 4 episodes specifically, like right from the gate, he is already just like bitching about, like, the original Aang didn't really bitch about shit that much. Like, he had fun and like he knew he had this responsibility, but like the weight of the responsibility didn't hit him yet. It took a while and like some character development and character moments for like him to really feel the weight of his responsibility. Whereas from here, really quickly, he's just like, oh, I fucked everything up. Like, I'm horrible. And like, the weight of the world's on my shoulders and I got to save the world. And like every episode, he's like, but I'm the Avatar and I got to save the world. And I was like, man, they really made him like cry about shit quick. Like, he's just crying about shit every episode.
He's a lot more sullen than the Aang from the cartoon, for sure. He doesn't like have the jovial all the time personality. Now, one could argue, and this is what I was saying in my intro, one could argue that this makes him more realistic, because I do think that the cartoon Aang is an unrealistic character. Like, I don't think that a kid is actually like that in real life. I think that kids go through a flurry of emotions, and a lot of times kids don't know how to handle those emotions. Whereas, you know, this Aang is a little boy who had his whole tribe massacred, or he saw his sensei's body dilapidated. Like he literally saw a fucking corpse sitting on the ground. So I was like, okay. Again, you don't, I don't think you see that in the original cartoon. I don't think that he sees.
You see, yeah, you do see the skeleton.
Okay.
Like it shows because that's the first time Aang goes into the, well, not technically the first time. The first time is 100 years ago, but it's the first time in current timeline that Aang goes into the Avatar state, because he goes to the Air Nomads because they're like, they're wiped out. They're extinct. And Aang's like, no, they're not. You guys are idiots. Of course they are. And then he goes there and then he sees Monkey Atso's like body just like completely skeletal, like in the corner, just dead. And that's when he like freaks the fuck out. But yeah, on the episode one, what we were just talking about, with all the adult actors and Aang, but when the fucking Fire Nation attacks.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's at night and the comet is in the background and you see the fire actual attacks coming down. I couldn't tell if it was soldiers coming down or just fireballs being shot. Either way, it looked really fucking cool. And also, I wanted to ask you this. Do you feel like the airbenders, because I don't remember the original show that well, so a lot of, just now, I forgot that he saw his master's, you know, dead body or bones. So, are the airbenders just considered the most powerful benders? Is that like a thing? Because even Sozin said in episode one right here, like, on a different day, you probably would have bested me, but not on today when I have the power of the comet. That line was cringy the way he delivered it. I'll be honest, but...
So I don't think the airbenders, from my memory, in the original Avatar, the airbenders weren't seen as like the most powerful. For the most part, the nations were seen to be relatively equal in power and like overall ability. I think what that line maybe have meant was that Monkey Atso was just that guy. And I think maybe Sozin was just recognizing like, Monkey Atso, you're actually better than me. But like, today I have the comet.
And also there was a line that was said about how the Fire Nation is kind of weak to air power. Did you catch that? It was in a live adaptation.
Not he said that my head.
I think it was either Uncle Iroh said it. Somebody said at some point, the Fire Nation has always been weak. One of their weaknesses has always been air power, which obviously the airbenders, you know, they have that on lock. But they said that line. And I also noticed it. So in my head, wind and fire, I always think that fire wins. But in the Avatar verse, because you always have to go by the verse, just how like in Naruto is different too. Just like how things work in Naruto, which is very different. Like for some reason, lightning gets beat by wind. And I don't really get it. But like, if Sasuke clashed with Rasengan, apparently he loses because lightning loses to wind. That's just how they set it up. You just have to accept it.
Yeah. Every verse has like weird elemental, like in Pokemon, right? Water beats fire and fire loses to water. But in some Final Fantasy games, not all of them, but in some Final Fantasy games, fire beats water and water beats fire.
Right.
They beat each other. Yeah. But not in every Final Fantasy game, just some of them.
It's very strange. So I didn't know if that was like a thing in the original cartoon where the Air Nation was considered the strongest, or if the Firebenders were weak to wind. If that was like, you would think it's water, which is, you know, it makes sense that it would just be like the Water Nation is our natural enemy. But when the Fire Nation invaded, the fucking Air Nomads were holding their absolute own against them. There was a point where I was like, wait, I thought that they had the comet. Why are they getting bodied? Like, at first they were just getting bodied.
The Air Nomads were definitely putting in work. The one part where... But then it was funny, too. There's the one girl who, like, she used her body to create a tornado. She was, like, fucking people up. But then Sozin showed up and just turned the tornado into a fire tornado and fucking burned her.
I was like, why did no one else think of that?
Yeah, just burned her to death. And then
there was nothing but ashes left of her either. I like how brutal the show is when it comes to death.
Very brutal. When Sozin walks in to Monkey Atso, though, and he's, like, starting up a storm and shit, and Sozin's walking through it as the wind is hitting him, and then like fire starts like flittering off of Sozin's body. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Armor of
like,
fire.
That shit was like, no pun intended, that shit was hot. Like it was so good.
I genuinely like the massacre at the Air Nomad Temple. Was it the Southern Temple or whatever? I really like that scene. That scene to me alone makes the show worth watching. And this is kind of what I'm getting at. Like, I think that people are so quick to throw away an entire series because of like a couple of bad lines or like, you know, the character's not one-to-one what they want them to be. I'm not saying that we have to accept this adaptation as like the golden standard because the other ones are so bad, because that is kind of like bullshit too. I don't want people to think that, oh, because Death Note's adaptation on Netflix is so awful that the next time Death Note gets an adaptation, we just have to be like, this is so good because it's so much better than the other one.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Like, for example, like I said, when I watch something, I don't think to myself, like, oh, well, it's better than the Death Note adaptation.
Right.
When I'm watching it, right, it's just like, what actual enjoyment am I feeling at the time? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not comparing it to other things as I'm watching. Like, after you watch it, you might compare it to things. But as you're watching, at least for me, I'm not, like, critically comparing it to everything I've ever seen. So I'm watching it, and like I said, I enjoyed it. There was multiple moments in basically every episode where I was like, I wish that wasn't. I wish it didn't happen that way. And there was, like, things that I thought were, like, pretty bad or pretty cringe. Or
in episode one, there's a part where Katara sees the beam of light fly up from the fucking iceberg. And then they go back to, like, their village, Wolf Cove. And then a Fire Nation shows up literally within the same hour. And they're like, she's like, why are they here? What could they possibly want? And I was like, bro, who wrote this script? Like, who actually wrote this fucking script? That shit was so bad. But then there's funny parts and where Aang slides out. Funny, go ahead. You go. Yeah,
well, I was going to say, what's funny about that, too, is, like, and this is... Okay, so one gripe I do have with this is that it's 8 episodes. Yep. I think one of the problems with it, it's the same problem that a lot of these shows are having, is that it's not long enough, and I feel as though they just try to condense too much. Like 30% of this season is from season two. Now, I'm not trying to do that thing where it's like, I know the original and blah, 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 so like that makes things like this bad, but season one and season two in the cartoon are the same, they have the same amount of episodes. I think it's 25 or something, I don't remember. But season one and season two, the same amount of episodes. So I just think it's weird that they included a lot of plot points that are don't get introduced until season two in season one, because then it makes you feel like, what are you guys going to do going forward?
Yeah.
And if they just kind of made it 12 episodes, or I mean, 10 episodes being the Netflix standard, but if even then, if it was like 12 episodes, like if this aired on normal TV, it'd be 12 or 24 episodes. But if they just made it a bit longer and gave it more time to breathe and spread some things out, because for example, like you said, that was really funny. The beam of light happens, and then they're like,
they bring Aang
how
back,
come the Fire
the,
Nation?
Yeah,
how
the Fire Nation shows up like, no crazy. Fucking shit. Also, it's known that the Fire Nation is looking for the Avatar. This is not like the biggest secret. Like the Avatar disappeared.
So
it's just
What's funny though is like, because that scene, even though I think it's stupid to say that, it's really stupid to say that in the live action. In the original, a part of it makes even more sense because it's not just the beam of light. Aang and Katara, they go play and like into like an old Fire Nation warship, and they accidentally set off like a trap in there, and it sends a smoke signal from the Fire Nation ship up in the air. And so Zuko sees that. And then also on top of that, I think they see the beam of light, and then they're like, oh, the Avatar is there. And like, because they see a smoke signal from like a Fire Nation ship, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of stuff ends up getting condensed. And, you know, and then there's other examples later on. But yeah, it is funny, though, because some of the writing is just like, really? Like, what? Yeah. What do you mean? You know why they're here.
I think Sokka, like the way he is fine. I know people were complaining that he wasn't sexist enough, that he wasn't ridiculous enough. But I thought that he was fine. Like, I think his characterization in the live action.
I mostly agree. Episode one, Sokka was my favorite character because I was like, wow. I was like, I feel like they really got Sokka like better than the other characters. I feel like they got Sokka down pretty well in episode one.
When he wanted to leave Aang, I thought that shit was so funny though. Literally, like, Aang slides down. Aang comes out the iceberg. This is what I was going to say earlier. Aang slides down the iceberg, right? Lands in front of them. They look at him. And then he's like, all right, let's go back now. And Katara's just standing over the body. And she's like, well, we can't just leave him here. He's like, this weird fucking kid who just came out of an iceberg. You want to bring him back? Like, no, we're going home. And she's like, you know, she gives him the sad eyes. And eventually he agrees to let Aang come on the ship. But like, that's so Sokka to just want to like fight or flight with him is always flight. So I thought that was really cool. Like, he's kind of a coward. It's kind of one of his characteristics. So that was funny.
It was really good. On the sexist note, the only thing I'll say is, like, I'm fine with them toning it down, but it does suck a little bit in that episode of the Kyoshi Warriors, because it felt like it just once again moved a little bit too fast. It was like, Sokka was there, and then, like, there wasn't really any real form of him being like, oh, well, I'm better than you because I'm a man. Like, I'm abbreviating the situation. But anyway, he just was kind of just immediately horny.
Yep.
And then she got immediately horny. Like, they just got horny fast.
And they were kissing by the end of the episode. And I was like, wait, what? Yeah. How did they become... So quickly, they became lovers, kind of. And I was just like... Now, granted, during the episode, right, it's not lost on us that we saw her looking at him with his shirt off when she came to tell him that breakfast was ready. And also the way he was trying to say, like, oh, I'm also the protector of my village where I come from and stuff like that. And she was like, you? Really? Which was a low-key insult. He didn't pick up on it because he's stupid. And just, like, stuff like that, I thought it was really cool because you do get the part that he's an airhead, right? When she's like... She's insulting him by saying, you, really? Like, that's an insult. If I tell you that I'm the fucking protector, bitch, you better fucking hop on, all right? Like, I'm that boy. Like, look at my muscles. Like, you know, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to, was the
he's
lady
trying to flex, and she's just kind of like,
The Lady and the Tramp, you know? It's like the Lady and the Tramp. The one dog, he like pees and farts roll out and shit like that, just trying to show off. Like, I'm a man. I'm a man dog. And then like the, you know, a lot of them look at him like, you're fucking disgusting.
Not the reference I was expecting today, but yeah.
You've seen The Lady and the Tramp though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like that, because it's an old Disney movie. It's an 80s Disney movie, I feel like. But it's one of those ones where...
It's definitely old, but it's classic, man.
It's a classic for sure. But it goes back to Sokka just trying to be, like, this macho man, and she doesn't really give a shit. And I think that is part of his character, too. Like, I think that is a, you know, that's a Sokka thing. Airheaded, kind of a little bit of a lover boy and all that stuff. And, yeah, so the Kyoshi episode was interesting. I messaged Kenny because... There's a thing that happens in that episode that was just like so not part
Real
of the
quick,
original
right before
series.
That though, on episode one, I want to ask you something.
Okay.
Like, speaking of cringe, I cringed really hard when the grandmom started saying the opening to the cartoon when she was like, water, fire,
earth, all nations lived in harmony.
Until and then like she says it. I thought her line delivery was real bad. I was just like, man, this is coming off not good for me.
So this is what I mean, though. I did not find that cringe. And the reason is because I thought it was cool. And remember, this is also somebody who
I thought it was cool, but I was like, oh, man, I don't know. Like, I just didn't like the delivery of it. But yeah.
Maybe the acting was bad. I didn't notice it that much. But here's what I was thinking. I was wondering how they were going to incorporate things from the original show into the live action. And I have the same question when it comes to Final Fantasy VII's remake, because some of the things look good, or they work because they were little fucking polygons. And like when you try to translate certain scenes from Final Fantasy VII polygons to Final Fantasy VII remake, where they look like us. Okay, the graphics are so high that like a lot of Cid, the way Cid is, for example, when his fucking shit is burning down and he's going crazy and he's like making all these little movements. I'm like, how, like the comedy of that might be lost if you have a person doing it. Anyway, my point is, I was wondering how they were going to try to incorporate things from the original into this adaptation, but not make it so blatant. And I like the way they did a lot of that. So one of the ones was him riding on the air ball in the background while they're talking. And then you see him hit up against the rock.
Awesome.
When she started going over the monologue from the original series, I was like, that's actually kind of cool that somebody explains it to Aang. And that's the way you hear it. And of course, you're never going to hear it again at the beginning of every episode like you did in the original. But I just thought, me personally, I was like, oh, I like that they incorporate it into the storytelling as opposed to just like the intro of Avatar is this every time.
So I agree with that. I thought the idea of it was really clever.
Yeah, just the delivery of it wasn't very well done.
It was just the grandma's actor. I was just like, oh my God.
These
like,
are some budget actors for
sure.
She's
so bad to me.
Yeah. Budget actors
that
for
said,
sure. Iroh was not.
I thought Uncle Iroh. I thought Uncle Iroh was great.
We agree. I fucking said Iroh before you. I was like, Iroh was not. Yeah. The episode.
Iroh was really good.
I think it's episode 4. You finally get some reveals on like, why he is the way he is, and they explain about his son. And his son died during a siege of I guess the earth nation, and
I think it's
Ba Sing Se. So Ba Sing Se, his son dies during that siege, and he kind of abandons it, I believe. And then they show him crying at his son's funeral ceremony, and his acting, he doesn't say a single word in that scene. He doesn't say a single thing. Zuko says stuff. The Fire Lord says stuff. Other people say things.
I teared up. I did tear up on that episode.
Oh, good.
Legitimately.
You have emotions. I'll be wondering about you sometimes.
I teared up on that episode because what? I always talk about tearing up.
Okay, good. I'm just making sure.
What the hell?
Just temp checking you.
I'm going to temp check your ass.
Not me. Not my ass on display, no.
But no, I mean, that episode, also Zuko, I felt Zuko's acting in that episode was really good. Like, when he was talking to him, and he was just like, and he was talking about how, like, Luten gave me this medal, I forget.
It was for the strongest.
I don't remember. Yeah, and he was like, it's for, like, to give you strength and stuff like that. And he was like, Luten never needed it, because, like, he was already the strongest and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, you know, but he gave it to me, and he was like, and I want to give it to you. And it was just really cool. And it's something that the original Last Airbender does amazingly well. And I thought was done pretty well here too, is like Uncle Iroh and Zuko's relationship is one of the best things about the series, because you have Zuko who wants so badly the respect of his father and will do anything to get his father's respect. And he doesn't realize the toxicity of his father's relationship and how much of a just bad person and parent his father is.
Yeah.
And he's lucky enough that he has like basically a perfect parent right next to him that's always by his side anyway. Like, his uncle is a better father than like any other father could be.
Right.
And then for that, so like Zuko, even though his father's not dead, his father is like horrible. And so Zuko has like this replacement father. And then Iroh, like, Zuko kind of becomes his replacement for his son. Like, Lu Ten is gone, and then Zuko is there for him. And then
that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he ends up kind of, because before Lu Ten dies, Iroh was like one of the greatest commanders of the Fire Nation.
Yeah.
Like,
he was with all the ships that they were on. He was really, he was terrible.
He was, and he was attacking Ba Sing Se. He had the longest siege and the longest like military advancement on Ba Sing Se ever. Like, nobody ever lasted that long attacking Ba Sing Se. They still held out. And a lot of people believed he was going to break through, but then his son died and it kind of completely broke his spirit. And that's what brought him out of it. And then he kind of gains more wisdom, and then he kind of imparts that wisdom on the Zuko. He doesn't want what happened to Lu Ten to then happen to Zuko. And he kind of corrects his mistakes as a father with his nephew. And like all of that, and a lot of that kind of takes more seasons in regular Avatar to happen. Yeah. But in this one, it happens pretty quick. Like you said, episode 4 like already has like the Lu Ten flashback, which is pretty crazy. But I think it did, you know, I definitely felt emotional watching it. Like, it was really fucking
good. I liked
really
a couple well things done. With Uncle Iroh's development. So you don't really know how he is because, okay, if you watch the original, then you already know that he's technically a good guy, right? And he doesn't agree with what his brother does as the Fire Lord. He's always trying to, like, set up the next Fire Lord, because obviously it's going to be Zuko. He's trying to set him up to be a better person, a more compassionate person, which Fire Lord Ozai believes makes you weak. And so you watching the original series, you already know from the onset, like, oh, his uncle's actually throwing him off on purpose. Like, there's parts where he would say, where did he go? And his uncle would just, like, say, oh, we need to go get sticky rice. And we and he would do things to stall him out to give Aang opportunity to, like, get away. When he would see Aang, he would impart, like, little words of wisdom to him. He would also try to tell him that Zuko's not as bad as you think, because he's like, oh, he's a coward. He left you here in a prison. I'm starting to see what kind of person he really is. And Iroh says, I don't think so. Not yet. So it's like little things like that. But the part that got me the most was when he was on the wagon with the Earthbenders. And the one came up and talked about how his brother was during that siege, like, there was nothing left of his brother because of how badly burned he was, that when they had to have the ceremony, there was nothing to really put on display for his brother. That's how that's just how the Fire Nation does when they kill people. So he was explaining that, and he was really angry, and he wanted revenge on Iroh. He's like, you got this guy in front of you right here who was responsible for this big siege that happened a long time ago, and you could do whatever you want to him, technically, right? And the opportunity is ripe. But Iroh seems so defeated already, and he's a pacifist. He really doesn't want to fight. And you can kind of tell. So as the guy's berating him and telling him these stories, and then he offers Iroh some water, that he dumps it out as soon as Iroh goes to reach for it. He's like, water. He's like, firebenders don't need water. It's just very inhumane things. He's treating him like not a person. And so Iroh kind of just simply throws it back at him, but in not a smug way either. He makes a comment about, like, how terrible people can treat others during war. He's like, I wasn't talking about myself. I was talking about you. And the guy has to hold that, because at the time he looks at himself and he's like, yeah, I am treating you very awful. And he's like, yeah, war drives people to do things that they normally wouldn't do. And he says a lot of blood was shed during that time. And basically it's this slow reveal that he isn't the person, the savage that he used to be. And he wants to atone for it. He can't fully atone for it. Of course, he's not stupid. He's aware of that. But his atonement is making sure his nephew turns out to be a better person than his father, than Ozai, and also not engaging, like, actually in massacring more people. Like, he's just not going to do it. He holds back. Iroh in the cartoon is one of my favorite characters, if not my actual favorite character, next to, like, Toph and stuff.
He's my favorite. Yeah, he's the best.
There's that one prison scene in the original that I'll never forget where you think that he's in handcuffs and that he's actually in this jail cell. And then, like, in one of the episodes, he simply breaks the cuffs and opens up the jail cell with his bare hands and just, like, steps out of it. He's just like,
nope.
He just fucking flexes, and he's muscular as shit under his garbs and stuff. He reminds me of Ginryu Yusai, because Bleach and Avatar were running at the same time. They were running concurrently. And I'll never forget the first time you see Ginryu Yusai against his two captains that he trained. And he, you know, his sword, his cane transforms to a sword. He stands up for the first time. You're like, wait a second. This guy is not actually some old man who can't do anything. He's the strong, fit man. So Iroh, he's a problem. In the cartoon, I love that scene where he's in the jail cell and he's pretending, like, to be this meek person. But then as soon as the guards are gone, he stands up straight. He fucking opens the jail cell and just, like, walks out of it. And it tells you that this whole time he could have killed probably everybody in that fucking prison. He's a very powerful firebender. Well,
that's how I was feeling. Sometimes I feel like people are stupid. When he was with the Earthbenders, and I don't remember what episode it was, but in these first 4 episodes, when he's with the Earthbenders and he's chained up and they're, like, talking shit First of all, they recognize they know who he is because they call him the Dragon of the West.
Yeah.
They say, like, oh, aren't you the great Dragon of the West?
What a name.
So they already know the man, first of all. Second of all, like, they put the chains on him, right? And I was watching this with Anthony, who's been on the podcast a bunch of times. I was watching this with Ant, his husband, and Connie. And I was like, guys, those chains don't stop the fire. Like, yeah. He can still firebend them.
They're not
like,
sea stone cuffs.
He's not a devil fruit. Yeah, that's literally what I said. Shit. I was like, he's not a devil. I literally said that. I said, he doesn't have a devil fruit. Like, they're not sea stone cuffs. Like, he can still firebend. Yeah. Like, he's still a problem for everybody here.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I thought the same thing.
You're talking all this shit. He can ruin all of you.
Yeah, he can kill everybody there. And it'd probably be so easy for him to do. He's a very, from what I remember in the cartoon, is that he's a very powerful firebender. So he obviously is one of those people that probably could have been the Fire Lord and all that stuff. He's one of those brothers that is actually more reasonable and probably more powerful than the one who is currently in rule. But because he has a heart, and I think that whoever the father of Ozai and Iroh was, he clearly saw that, like, okay, you're softer. And the other brother is the cutthroat one who's willing to do anything. And that's the one who's going to be the heir to the throne. That's kind of how they do it. So Azula has the same, I haven't seen much of her yet because it's only four episodes, but Azula has been shown, and already they're setting up her versus Zuko as like a thing, because Zuko has this task of finding an avatar, which was supposed to be impossible, but then the avatar does appear. Zuko's on his way to gaining some real respect by their dad. And Azula is like, oh shit, I don't really like this because I think I'm better than Zuko. And really, we know from the cartoon that she thinks she should be the heir to the throne. That's what she actually ultimately is going to want. She's not fully voicing that just yet, but she did talk to her girls and she's like, yeah, like, I don't really agree with just being holed up in this castle. And I do everything that my father asks. I do everything right. And Zuko's like a fucking failure, basically. So there's a lot of storylines being set up, but storylines that, again, I already know. So it's not really a spoiler for me to just, like, I know what's going to happen unless they drastically change things. Now, speaking of things they drastically did change, because we were on this before we jumped into, like, the last 20 minutes. But in episode 2, which is probably the most, like, wild episode, and I think it's actually a cool episode. Like, I'm not mad at it. But they showed this thing with the Kyoshi warriors, and I liked a lot of the development with that. Like, they did a good job expanding on Nicole Kyoshi avatar and how she, I think she was, what, an earthbender originally?
Yeah.
She's an earthbender originally. She started off as like a meek girl who no one thought would ever become the avatar or anything like that. She was just like a regular meek girl. And then Aang was like, how did she go from being that to being this? And they pan over to this painting of her. And it's like her doing all four elements. And she's like this fierce ass warrior with the fans and shit. It's a really cool drawing. And he's like, how did she go from that, like this meek girl, to being this ridiculously powerful warrior that everyone was afraid of? And she wielded all four elements perfectly. And so at the end of the episode, the Fire Nation comes to the island, and this island is they're Switzerland. They don't get involved with whatever's going on in the outside world. They're kind of their own little country, even though they're just an island, but they're their own little country that governs themselves, and everybody kind of leaves them alone because they don't bother anyone either. So they try to be pacifists and everything, but that doesn't mean that they're defenseless. Like, they can fight, and they train.
No, they are not.
They're trained to fight. So at the end of the episode, the Fire Nation comes, and they're demanding that, like, oh, we feel like you had a visitor, which is the airbender, the last airbender, the Avatar. And they, you know, they say, can we search the island? And she's like, oh, yeah, I knew that you would have it no other way. And as soon as they start to search the island, the main head of the island, who wasn't a character in the original, I believe, but, like, she starts to fight them. And she, the old lady, she gets
she
it
can
in.
Throw hands.
Yeah.
She's throw hands.
Wielding the fans and shit. She's blocking fire attacks with the fans. And I thought that was really cool. There's a cool action sequence. Aang is on the top of a mountain somewhere on this island, and he is in his avatar mode talking to Kyoshi, the spirit of the avatar that she was, and she's imparting all his wisdom to him about how you're gonna have to make hard decisions and all of these things, that the avatar is not an easy job and it is going to be difficult, but you are strong enough to do it. And then out of nowhere, she tells him to say, like, help me, avatar Kyoshi, and he summons her. Like, I didn't realize at the very onset that he became her. But, like, she possesses his body, and she teleports, or, like, flies away. He's, like, you know, on the top of the mountain. She flies away in his body, but it looks like her. And yeah,
it's, like, fully fucking Kyoshi. Like, yeah, like, I was so confused.
To the point where everyone is seeing Kyoshi, too. Like, they're not seeing, they're not seeing Aang with a silhouette of Kyoshi behind him. They're literally seeing the physical incarnation of Kyoshi, the avatar from the past, who's dead. Who, mind you, there's a giant statue of this person on this island, and everyone basically worships this avatar. Like, this is their avatar. They worship this like she's a god. So she appears, and at first I was like, yo, is it Aang? And we're just seeing that as a viewer, that is Kyoshi taking over. But no, when you see all the other warriors, they're looking at it, they're like, oh shit, it's our god. She zero diffs the Fire Nation real bad, and it's actually cool as shit. Like, she zero diffs them so fucking bad, bro. And I'm like, god damn, this is insane. But this also just did not happen. Like,
yeah, so
at all.
Here's what I'll say. A version of it happened, but not like that. And it's very hazy in my memory because it's been a while, but I didn't remember it at all. But then Ant reminded me, and then I kind of remember it happening. But basically, I do remember this. They were on the Kyoshi Island, and Aang was dressed up in Kyoshi's clothes.
Okay.
They had Aang in Kyoshi's clothes with the paint and everything. And some things happened, and I think he went into the Avatar state. Basically, I don't remember him fully turning into Kyoshi and it being a whole thing like that.
Right.
I think it just looked like Kyoshi because he was wearing Kyoshi's clothes already, and he went into the Avatar state. And when you're in the Avatar state, you can, even if you haven't learned all the elements, he can bend all the, like, he can do whatever the fuck he wants, basically, in the Avatar right. state. So,
because he's connected to all of them at that time.
Yeah, so, like, something like that happened, but it 1,000,000% was not the way it happened here, where, like, he stood in the shrine, and Kyoshi literally became possesses real his body, again.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that did not, I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, that shit was crazy.
But it was really cool, though, the way the firebenders had to run away, because she was doing the fucking most.
Yeah, but she was also like, I was like, if they can do this, what's Aang got to train for? Like, just bring in Kyoshi and send her out.
Honestly, that. Okay, so can we talk about this? I'm only on episode 4, but this is something that does bother me about this show so far. The training. You brought up the word training, and that word is triggering to me, because as I'm watching this, I'm waiting to see, when is Aang going to start training for the other elements? Because
you're halfway through, and you haven't seen Aang bend water yet.
No, and this is my problem. So I remember in the cartoon that Aang and Katara, they like play fight with water bending.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it, because another thing that they took out is Katara was looking for a waterbending master, and that's the reason why she goes with Aang in the original. That isn't what happens in this. It's just like completely different. She doesn't have this, I want to go see a water master at all now. So the training aspect of the Avatar show, which is I feel like that's a big part of Avatar, is like him training and learning the other elements. There's been no talk of him learning a waterbending yet. He did help her to do waterbending, which was strange. Like, he
hasn't done it at all.
He hasn't done it. And I was expecting, when he told her, like, my master used to teach me that you have to grab an emotion and then bring it to the forefront and, like, hold on to that, and that helps you to bend. Other than when he was saying that he was going to start the water bend right there, and they even had it set up perfectly. They were next to a river that was running, and, like, she was trying and stuff like that. But then she bends water, but he doesn't. And then, like, without any training shown, she just kind of, like, starts doing ice bending too. I thought that was interesting, but I was kind of annoyed that Aang so far has only used airbending. He fights Bumi, and he's still only using airbending. He doesn't do any. There was a part where he was fighting Bumi, and Bumi had the two gigantic stalagmites over top of both of them, and I was like, oh shit, perfect opportunity. Aang has, he's already doing airbending, but he's probably gonna do some earthbending right here to, like, do something with these rocks. And no, in fact, Katara comes in, and she, like, you know, Sokka, she, like, makes an ice slide, which I don't know, I didn't like it, but she, like, makes an ice slide for Sokka to do a sub-zero attack on Bumi to, like, get him out of the way, and then the rock falls, and then Aang can put down the rocks. And I was like, okay, I guess that's, like, the way they're going to resolve this. But I just didn't like the fact that he's only been doing airbending this entire time, and his airbending is ridiculous. And they did show a flashback saying that, like, he was a prodigy already. So
yeah, so that's kind of, I'm in agreement with my issue with that. The show does go out of its way to say that Aang's a prodigy. And the point is, in the cartoon, once again, I don't want to be the guy that's like, well, this is different from the cartoon, so that means it's bad. That's not what I'm saying. Like, it can be different, and all this stuff, it just needs to be done well. And I think some things in this are done well. To be clear, I don't think I've said this yet. Out of the last three Netflix adaptations, I consider them, like, kind of in the same ilk, that being Cowboy Bebop, One Piece, and this Avatar one. I think I like the Avatar one maybe the most. I just, like, it has some real problems. Like, the acting in it is, like, I'm just seeing the rest of it.
Yeah, I do like One Piece a lot, though. Like, when One Piece season 2 comes out, I'm going to rewatch One Piece season 1. Just because
I'll probably do the same thing.
Just because I want to, because the story is a little different the way they're telling it in the One Piece. So I just want to, like, Garp is already revealed and stuff like that to be his grandfather. And there's just a lot of things they moved around. I just want to rewatch so I remember how this story is unfolding. That way I'm not confused when something happens in season 2 and I'm like, wait, what? So
yeah, I'll probably do the same thing. But so anyway, that said, I'm not griping on things just because they're different. The point is, though, in the original cartoon, they make it clear that Aang's a prodigy, but they also do that here. So my argument is, like, I can make this point because in the show, they make a point that Aang is a super prodigy when he was like fucking 8 years old. He was such a crazy good airbender. Like, people were scared of him.
He almost killed every kid on the mountain by blowing him off the damn mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, he's absurd, right? So we know he's a prodigy. We also know he's the Avatar, so he can learn all four elements. At this point in the time in the cartoon, when Katara is like learning how to waterbend better and she's training, Aang starts training with her, and Aang kind of makes the joke that, like, oh, you can be my waterbending master. Like, you can teach me waterbending. And he starts learning waterbending, and Katara gets jealous. This happens very early on because Aang starts picking up waterbending really quickly.
My man makes a tentacle monster out of water.
Yeah.
He makes like these fucking eight tentacle water things, and he's like moving them all at once. And she's looking at him like, what the fuck? We ain't get there yet.
He gets good fast, and he starts getting better than her in some ways, and she starts to get jealous of that. And so I just think it's weird because, like, that tension and that part hasn't happened. Like, Aang is, we're four episodes in, and he hasn't touched water yet. Like, he's done nothing with it. And we know that he needs to master waterbending this season, because next season he's got to learn earthbending and then firebend. Like, he's got to learn how to bend.
Yeah, he's got to learn how to bend at some point. And so far, it's I'm only four episodes in, but it has not happened at all. He's just an airbender still. He's doing a lot with the airbending. I will give him that. He fought against Zuko at one point. And then, you know, there was that whole weird fight that they had again where they were like in the middle of the Omashu, and it's like a swap meet area, like a market area. And they were fighting there, and he was doing a whole lot of cool things with airbending. I genuinely think that the fight choreography and the way the bending looks, it's really well done. Even the way.
Yeah.
The one girl came, she's like, are you an airbender? And then he, without saying anything, he just like grabs like a cup or a spoon or some shit and like moves it with air.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just shows off to the kids. And I thought that was awesome. Like, that's just something that you have to remember, he's 12. He doesn't realize how dangerous it is to just show off his abilities like that. Like, it's actually dangerous to do that. But he's 12. So, and they remind you that he's 12. So I like a lot of the essences of the original Avatar being like, Aang is a kid. You have to treat him like a kid. You can't be like, oh, well, that's so dumb. Why would he do that? Like, of course, he's a fucking 12-year-old. If I had powers at 12, I'm going to show them off. All I'm going to do is probably show off my powers.
This is kind of a side tangent, but, you know, we're here. What if you could pick? I think we've probably talked about it, but what bending do you think you would want the most?
Oh, God.
So fire, earth, water, or air?
So I'm going to try to keep this to just Avatar, The Last Airbender, not Book of Korra, where I get like a lot more on what the bending styles can go into, because that skews my decision making a bit. Because just like Korra just showed permeations. Like I said, the permeations in Korra are fucking dumb. Okay. Like, there's some of them are just straight up dumb. But you do get bloodbending in the original Korra, or not, in the original Avatar, if I'm not mistaken. Like, bloodbending is a thing that you see.
Yeah. In the original Avatar, it's only can be done by like a masterclass waterbender and under a full moon.
Yep. So it's a very special thing. This is a hard question for me because it is. Let me eliminate one immediately. I do not care for firebending at all.
Mm-hmm.
Firebending is eliminated. I think earthbending is cool, but I think air and waterbending are the two that I like the most. And if I had to choose, this is so hard. I'm going to go with airbending. I'm going to go with airbending being like the one that I would choose for myself. And it's weird because electricity is like my favorite elemental power out of the regular ones. And firebending goes into electricity, which we also see in the original Avatar before Korra, like Azula can do it. And I think the Fire Lord can do it too, right?
Yeah. The Fire Lord can do it.
Yeah. Not everyone can do it, but some people can. And I like this about Avatar that not every bender of a specific type can just do all of the permeations of that bending. Like, you, just because you're a firebender does not mean that you can guarantee just do lightning bending or combustion bending later on, right? Like, that's not a thing.
I mean, even Zuko, like the main firebender of the series, in original Avatar Last Airbender, like, he does everything to try to learn lightning bending, and he can't. Like, he never learns how to lightning bend. And he tries. Like, he actively practices and tries.
Yeah, and then there's lava bending, too, at one point, which I think, there's a lot of crazy bending styles. But just going off of Avatar The Last Airbender, it was canon for that show. I still like airbending the most because it just seems the most useful without having to be near your element.
So, okay. So
that's one of the criteria for why I like earthbending as well. But go ahead. What's your?
I have a similar answer. For me, I love a lot of earthbending and a lot of cool shit in earthbending. Like, there's so much stuff that I really love about earthbending and waterbending. But I think, like, if I got to choose, like, I wouldn't be mad with any of them, right?
Me either. I would be happy with any of them, but fire is, like, not as useful for obvious reasons, too. Fire destroys.
It does. But if I got the option to choose, it would be between fire and wind, because I feel like those are the two that are least dependent on being near other things.
Yeah.
Like, with earthbending, you could be put in situations where there's no earth for you to bend.
Right.
Whereas, and with waterbending, same thing. Until you learn, like, some of the broken shit where, like, you can bend water out of the air. But, like, that's, like, super high level
shit. That's water master level shit.
At base, fire and wind, you can just do from your body. Whereas, like, the other two can't really do that.
Wind is always on the table, which is broken. And
that's why I think, like, I think at the end of the day, wind is what I pick.
So I didn't expect that, but yeah, we both end up with wind. And now that I'm talking it out, I do feel like wind might be, without them explicitly saying it, but like, wind is always on the table, bro.
It's always on the fucking table. And then, like, it's so good.
Isn't there a point in Korra where, like, you can oxygen bend people? Like, you can just make it where they can't breathe?
Well, yes. There's a part in Korra where this airbender, he bends the oxygen out of the Earth Queen's lungs. Like, he's taking the air out of her lungs. And then not only that, he's making the air into, like, a vortex around her head and pulling air out of her lungs.
Her,
it's crazy.
There's a lot of things that, and eventually he can fly. That's also fucking insane. In this verse, flying is insane. Okay. So, like,
hey, Azula can fly. You know, Azula could be on that shit if you remember.
Like, what do you mean? I forget.
And Last Airbender.
I remember she starts using, like, the blue fire. She burst behind, like a jet.
She does, like, Bakugo shit. Like, she fucking propels herself through the air with flames from her, like, her palms and her feet.
Bro, the fight between Azula
and
Katara, when Katara says, I can take her, she's off. That fight that they have, bro, the way the blue flames look and the water bending and the ice bending that Katara does, and the way she beats her, where she, like, freezes, she, like, oh, it's so cool. Azula comes at her with, like, this crazy attack. Yes, and she
lifts up. Don't worry, guys. We're going to do a full regular Last Air, like, regular Last Airbender is going to get talked about.
100%. The way Katara does that, like, Kenny just did the motion if you're looking at this on Patreon, but the way she, like, lifts her hands like a puppeteer and lifts up this big deluge of water and then freezes it, and then they're both frozen in the water, and then she, like, slowly unfreezes where she's at, moves outside of it. It's so fucking cool looking. Also, just the way Azula comes in crazy with her hair all disheveled, and she's like, no, I could take her now. She's off. Katara knows on a good day, Azula is that girl, and that she will she will lose. But in that particular moment in the original series, when she's like, no, like, I can take her. Like, I think that she's a little off right now. I thought that scene was so fucking, oh, it's so good. But yeah.
But yeah, I think airbending is, if I get to choose, I think ultimately I choose airbending just because I feel as though it's the most versatile and you can use in the most situations. I think that aside, if, like, I had some guarantee that my bending would never be turned off, I think I'd probably pick earth. I think earth is, like, my next favorite after that. I really like earth and just, like, I don't know, it's just, it's like a rugged, I just like it. I think it's very, very useful.
Cool. I think Earth might be, like, if you think about use cases, functionality, Earth is probably the most functional. So that's a big cool thing. Shit. Yeah, I mean, they said that the Earth Nation is the best built, flat out. Like, Iroh was explaining how, like, they're known for just having the best built power. They have impenetrable everything, including prisons. Like, all of their stuff is basically impenetrable. That's why they were able to withstand the Fire Nation for so long, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the Earth Nation is insane, and I kind of like that. Also, Earth tends to do that a lot, because even in Game of Thrones, you know, I love talking about Game of Thrones on every podcast that I can, but in Game of Thrones, they talk about the Seven Kingdoms and how they all had to kneel before Aegon the Conqueror, but one of them did just straight up withstand Aegon the Conqueror, and it's Dorne, or is it Dorne? Is that how you, Dorne. So that nation, which is, you know, the sand people, like, they're the fucking area that's the hottest in the Game of Thrones lore in Essos, but Dorne literally withstood Aegon, and in fact he lost one of his sister wives when they tried to invade Dorne and make them kneel like they did everywhere else. They went to Winterfell, they went to, like, literally every other of the Seven Kingdoms, and they made all of them kneel except Dorne. Dorne just, like, we're not doing that. We do not fucking bend to you guys. And instead, when they would come with the dragons and shit like that, and they would burn, they would be like, okay, you're burning sand, which doesn't do anything but turn it to glass. And eventually somebody just shot one of his sister wives off her dragon and she fell to her death. And then he withdrew and was like, you know what? Fuck it. We'll do this without Dorne. And I just think that that's so cool because fire, right? Aegon represents fire. The Targaryens represent fire. Their words are fire and blood. So they're the fire nation. And they come and they're like, the fire nation attacked. And everybody else is like, fuck, we lose. But then the earthbenders are like, nah, we'll just like let you try to lay siege here and you guys will starve. Or we'll start killing you guys like Iroh's son. And eventually you guys give up. And so for 100 years, and Bumi has been the king for a while, and he's over 100 years old. And I do think that that is attributed to earthbending. I think that it's funny what he said about it, though. But like, I think it's really cool that the earth in a lot of mediums is just able to withstand things a lot.
Yeah.
So
it's a very resilient element.
Yeah. Bumi says, good diet, a little bit of luck. Not sure if it's good or bad luck. I thought that was really funny. So, yeah, I think that they showed a little flashback of Bumi talking to Aang as when they were both kids. And Bumi's trying to sculpt things with his hands. So that shows that Bumi is kind of like a lousy earthbender at the time when they were younger. And then I always think in a cartoon, one of my favorite episodes is Bumi versus Aang. I think that is one of the fucking best episodes of the entire original Avatar. It is so cool, the power level that Bumi's at. And then the way Aang at 12 years old is able to, like, you know, do stuff against Bumi. But the shit that Bumi does, I think that he was obviously holding back. He just wanted to really test Aang. Because the way that fight ends, the way Bumi goes into a coffin and then falls backwards, and then like the ground envelops him, and then he shoots back up on his throne, and he does this thing where he gets shot up from the ground and he twists and like lands back in his chair.
Bro, it's insane.
Kenny,
the first time I saw that episode, I remember I was a kid, long time ago. I was a kid. And I remember being in my kitchen eating, I think, dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
And at the time, our TV in our kitchen was like very small. It was like a fucking 9-inch TV.
Yeah.
Like it was a small square. It was way up in the corner and it was just incredibly small. I can't believe my eyes were good enough to even see it. And that was just like the little kitchen TV. It was just tiny fucking box. And that's the first time I watched that episode on that TV. And I remember being enthralled by it.
Listen, like I said, that episode, there's a lot. The original Avatar has some go-to episodes. I don't think that this live action can live up to it. I still haven't seen the next four, but I'll wait to really give my strong opinion after we do the podcast for that one. But like, some of the episodes of the original are just so go-to. And some of the ones like the Full Moon episode with the Water Nation, insane. Like that episode went free in my mind from the original. Bumi versus Aang, absolutely insane. Azula versus Katara, all the Azula episodes were even like Azula versus Aang, because she bests him multiple times. She sends him in that like Avatar state, shit like that. She knocks him unconscious. She does a whole lot. Azula's that girl. Azula versus everybody, and she like blatantly just without bending is able to withstand attacks from everybody. Everybody's coming for Azula, and she has no bending, and she is doing the absolute unmitigated most. She's fucking insane.
She's absurd.
So, and in all the Uncle Iroh episodes, like we talked about, he's our favorite character. So, really, really just amazing stuff. I'm hoping that this show does capture some of that, because right now, like, you know, I did watch the Bumi versus Aang fight, and they did do a lot of the core. They did stuff straight from that episode. Like, they literally took some of the things that Bumi does in the fight, where he makes the two pillars come up, he starts throwing the discs and stuff at Aang and stuff like that, and Aang starts like swatting them and all that. There's a lot of stuff they do, but then you didn't get that cool ass moment where, like, the way Bumi even appears in the arena in the original, right? Like, I think that Aang walks into the arena and Bumi's like sitting on his throne, and he's on a die, you know, he's on that thing, and then he like does the shootout from the ground type of, you know, it's just really cool. The way
that was something that was kind of weird in general. And once again, like, this is something they changed and I don't really like, is that I feel like the whole relationship between Aang and Bumi was weird, whereas like their fight in the original was so that, because at the time Aang didn't know it was Bumi yet. And he gave him like a bunch of tests, and all of the tests taught him to like think outside the box. And Bumi was trying to teach Aang things about like thinking and et cetera. And then finally had a fight with him. And the whole point was like to get him to think outside the box. And then Aang had to figure out like, oh, you're Bumi. And that was like the final like reveal. So Aang figures out he's Bumi, whatever. But the whole time it's like Bumi is training Aang the entire time. And what's weird here is like, I almost felt like Bumi got annoyed at Aang. Like, it didn't feel
as,
Yeah, like, he got, like, legitimately annoyed and angry at Aang. And it didn't feel as, like, mentor. Like, the original one, Bumi was, like, literally mentoring Aang. Whereas in this one, it almost felt like Aang taught Bumi a lesson at the end, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like,
Because you could do things like, with your friends. Because Boomy was talking about doing stuff by yourself. You can't trust anyone, right? People abandon you. And he was throwing shots at him and berating him. And he was berating him so bad that I started to wonder, like, okay, wait, is he serious? Because I, at one point, I literally asked myself, wait, is he? I thought he was trying to, like, you know, get Aang riled up and stuff like that. But now I'm starting to wonder, does he actually, in this live adaptation, have these feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Because when he started to say, you abandoned everybody, you left us while people were dying, you were just sleeping for 100 years. And then he started saying things like, you know, you do have to make hard decisions, like who gets the last scrap of food out of the military or the orphanage? These are the kind of decisions. And I do think that that speech was powerful because Aang does need to understand in this live adaptation the gravity of him being the Avatar and the gravity of war. And he didn't fully grasp it yet. So when Boomy gave that speech in the live action, I wasn't mad at the speech, but I did wonder, like, wait, is he genuinely upset at Aang for being fucking frozen? Because Aang hasn't explained it yet, but, like, he didn't purposely abandon his post. He didn't mean to cryogenically freeze himself for 100 years. That wasn't the intent. He was going to die in a storm. Yep. And he
also didn't even, it's not, a, he wasn't even running from the fire. Like, he didn't know there was about to be a war.
No, he had, like, no idea.
He was running from the responsibility of, like, having to go train.
Yeah.
But, like, he wasn't running from, like.
He even said, let's go back. Like, okay, it's getting bad. Let's go back. He was on his way back and a storm was crazy. And then he went to Avatar State to save himself and he froze himself. And I think he did it all subconsciously. Like, I don't think that Aang.
Yeah, he didn't know how to do that.
Yeah, like, Aang doesn't fucking know how to freeze that water like that and turn into an iceberg for 100 years. That's not. So, Aang hasn't said this, and maybe it's because he doesn't really understand what happened that day either. It's 100 years ago. But I just think it's interesting that, like, people are blaming him for abandoning his post, but it's not as cut and dry as, like, you chose to run away from your responsibility and from the Fire Nation and stuff like that. Like, it's not like that. And Boomy, the way he's talking is like he's genuinely upset at Aang. And so I was a little confused. I didn't quite like that dialogue, but a lot of dialogue, and this is sketch or whatever, and it's just kind of like what you expect from live adaptations that are trying to cram 25 episodes of content, maybe even 50 episodes of content, because they're doing stuff from season two, like you said. 50 episodes of content into like a couple, into eight.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's weird. What's funny is that somebody did the math, and this is where I think the problem comes in, not necessarily how much time they have, but the pacing of what they're doing. Somebody did the math, and they revealed that the runtime, the minutes of you watching the show happen, season one of the Netflix is actually longer than season one of the cartoon. The cartoons, you know, however many, 25 episodes, I think, but, you know, they're like 22-minute episodes or whatever they may be. They're on Nickelodeon. And then, you know, this live action is like 50-minute episodes, whatever it is. I don't know. I don't know the exact breakdown, but the runtime is actually, there are more minutes of show in these eight episodes than there are in the original cartoon. And they were like, oh, so the people saying that they rushed it or didn't have enough time, like, they're you guys are just wrong. My argument against that is, and I didn't comment on this because I don't comment on Reddit anymore or YouTube or any of those places because, like, I'm not arguing with people on the internet.
Same.
It's a lot easier to put on the facade of, like, being right and pumping your chest out when you just can type and, like, you don't have to actually talk to the other person. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, anyway. But what I want to say now about that, though, is that even though there may be more minutes, the pacing is still off because at the end of the day, there is, and I think we might have talked about this on our One Piece episode. It is an episode that has to have its own individual rising and falling action. It has to have each episode has to have its own rising action, its climax, and its falling action. So in this, you get it only eight. You get that eight times.
Yeah.
Whereas in the original, you get that 25 times. So even though there may be more minutes, those minutes are spent on, like, not more stuff, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like exposition, which is something that you do in live stuff, where you just show characters long periods of time, characters just kind of, like, existing in their facial expressions and stuff like that, right? That's something that it translates better in live action than it does just look at a cartoon do that. So, you know, typically, you're right. The only thing I'm questioning, though, on that math, because that math sounds off, and obviously it's not your math.
I didn't check it. I didn't check the math. I just saw somebody say it.
So the Netflix show, let's say that the episodes are 60 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Which they're not. But let's say that they're 60 minutes. 60 times 8 is 480, right? Mm-hmm. So that's 480 minutes. If every episode of the Nickelodeon show is 22 minutes, which is what the conventional 30-minute show is with advertisements, commercials, stuff like that, 22 minutes of content, 22 times 25 is 550. So already it's 550 minutes.
Well, see. So you're an accountant, all right? You weren't in that thread, all right?
Yeah, no. And I just, like, I would immediately be like, I'll fire back, like, what do you mean that this is, it's not, it's just factually incorrect. Like, that, it just can't be that just can't be right. So I just want to throw that out there for people, because my ears went up when you said 20. I'm like, 20, even if the episodes were 20 minutes long, right? If they were 20 minutes long, 20 times 25, you just do 20 times 25, that's 500 minutes. So even that, and that's me saying that there's 10 minutes of commercials and ads in every episode of Avatar, which there could be, right? Like every episode could be genuinely 20 minutes of content.
Yeah, yeah.
So 20 minutes of content is fair. 20 times 25 is 500 minutes. That's still, and this is assuming that the live action is straight up an hour of content, and it's not. Like, those episodes are not an hour.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the first episode, I think, is, like, 58 minutes. But then, like, a lot of the other ones are, like, 40-something minutes.
Yes. So, I think that whoever said that is just, like, they could say that they're close, but they use the hyperbole that it's more. It's just, now you're overdoing it. And I think, I hate when people do stuff like that. Like, don't exaggerate.
I hate when people do it, too. But my thing is, like, I'd like to do this thing where if somebody makes a point, and even if I think the point's wrong, I'd like to do this thing where I go, I'll give you that. Let's say you're right.
Right. Let's say you're right.
I still think the fact that it's 8 episodes, right, it makes it so that the way the episodes play out, the pacing feels off. Because, for example, it really felt like, even though there's probably more time they spend together in the live action, it felt like Sokka and Suki, it felt like their relationship went lightning fast.
Yes.
And wasn't paced as well as the cartoon. Even though there's probably less time given to it in the cartoon, but because things happen over multiple episodes, it feels paced better.
Yeah, it all happens in one episode. Like I said, by the end of episode 2, they're fully like romantically kissing and everything. And it kind of threw me off a little bit because I guess my mind knows that you're watching a show, like an HBO show, a Netflix show, an hour long show. I don't expect to see development happen that goddamn fast.
Yeah.
So seeing it like this, I had to be like, well, you know what? I guess if I think about this just from the cartoon perspective, this is fine. But from if this was a story that was independent of the cartoon, right? Like this was, if The Last Airbender premiered on Netflix, and this is the only version of it that you had, it would be pretty bad from a storytelling perspective. The way things happened in episode 2 would be pretty fucking bad if it just happened like that. So a lot of it is me having to use the original series to kind of justify the way things unfold in the live action, just because of pacing issues and stuff like that they're going to have. But I think that's going to be true for every live action. I've yet to see a live action that really doesn't have some of those issues. And I do think that Avatar is a show, though, that the live action works. I think that some things live action just will never work. I do not think that Dragon Ball Z will ever have a good live action. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all the people who, like, I love Dragon Ball too. Like, we did,
I don't
a whole,
think so either. I just don't think it's doable.
I don't think it's doable. And I think that this is true for a lot of things. I think that a lot of things will never have a good live action because it's just not, the medium just isn't good for storytelling for some of these stories. Like, some of these stories are just not meant to be told live action. I'm sorry. They just aren't. And so I think Avatar, because it's basically like, a lot of concepts in Avatar are real life concepts, like World War II and the genocide against the Jewish people and the Holocaust. The Air Temple, right, is like literally a Holocaust on them. It's very similar in that.
Yeah. It's all that, and then it's just a kung fu movie, right?
Like, and then there's that too. There's a lot
which
of
which all works.
The teachings of martial arts and not using it just because you can, using it to protect others. Like, there's multiple lessons in Avatar the adaptation where they talk about how Katara and Sokka's, their mother died, and they were always griping about how it happened. And they said that, I didn't spend enough time, you know, loving the way that she lived. I was more so focused on the way that she died. And they also mentioned that she always taught the lesson of, you know, you're supposed to use your power to help people who can't help themselves. And so, like, stuff like that, I like it a lot, because I think that at the end of the day, we're grown ass men now and grown people watching these shows that we grew up on, and they're being adapted. But at the end of the day, this show is meant for children at the end of the day. So, like, I do get kind of annoyed when full grown-ups who grew up on these things and they're adapted, they're meant for your children now, right? Like, at the end of the day, yes, you can enjoy it. Like, for example, all the Disney movies are being remade live action. And a lot of adults who grew up on The Little Mermaid, they grew up on Beauty and the Beast, they grew up on all these things, they're, like, fucking upset. They're like, oh, you're ruining the classics. I'm like, no, they're reintroducing these classics to a generation of kids who, unless you showed them the originals, they fucking don't know what Beauty and the Beast is. Like, a lot of kids don't know what Beauty and the Beast is, like me and Kenny do, because we grew up when Beauty and the Beast was the new movie out, when Toy Story was the new movie out, when The Lion King was the new movie out. We were around during that time, but, like, the kids, unless you blatantly show them, this is The Lion King. Some parents don't. But then it comes out as a adaptation, live action, and it's like, oh shit, I grew up watching The Lion King. Let me take the kids to go see this. It'll be awesome. Kids enjoy these movies. They don't critique Kids don't go to the fucking movie of The Lion King and critique the way the lions look. I'm telling you, that's just not happening. They don't say the Little Mermaid is black. I fucking hate this. Why is that girl? Why does she have dreads in her head? Why is she a black girl? Kids don't go to the movie and say that. And so like people who are grown, they go into these adaptations or these remakes of things that from their childhood, and they have this resentment towards it, this fucking vitriol about it because it's not exactly what you grew up with. And not to mention that a lot of it is nostalgia goggles. Some things just were not as good as you remembered them to be. One thing for me was Power Rangers.
But like, you relax there, Sonny.
The Power Ranger movie, the first Power Ranger movie, as a kid, bro, you could not tell me that wasn't one of the best movies ever. Same with X-Men. The first X-Men movie, you wonder what happens to a toad when it gets struck by lightning. To me as a kid, my dad took me and my friend to go see it.
You thought that was hot.
That day of my life when my dad took me to go see the first X-Men movie is still one of the best days of my life in my childhood. Like, I think about it often.
That's cool.
And when I watch that movie now, it's so bad, but I would not go on a rampage about how awful like X-Men is now or whatever, because it's not really meant for me, and kids will enjoy the X-Men movies that come out now. They're not going to be critiquing the bad dialogue. Kids don't fucking think about how bad the Power Rangers original movie's dialogue is. Like, I didn't think anything about that shit. I didn't care that Tommy's lines were cringe. I didn't care that Jason's lines were cringe. That didn't matter to me. I just wanted to see my favorite people that I've been watching on this TV show every day transform into these cool ass costumes and summon Megazords, and that was good enough for me. So just like,
hot. All right, I don't care what nobody says. That movie was fire. Okay, you guys can keep hate.
I love Ninja Rangers.
I want to say real quick is a funny little memory, kind of like how you said. My memory of that, like, just like a memory with my dad going to the movies. Like, I have a bunch of them, but the one that sticks out the most to me, like how you said, you with X-Men. For me, this is so random, but we had to go see Biker Boys.
I don't think I've seen that.
But it's like, it's basically Fast and the Furious. It's literally Fast and the Furious, but they're on motorcycles. And I don't remember any of the actors in it except Megan Good. And we went to go see that movie. It was like a great night. I think it was my birthday. And my dad was like, you can pick like two friends and like, we'll go to the movie. And so like, I picked two of my friends. We went to the movies.
I'm sorry.
And
picking two friends is kind of funny if you had a whole bunch of them though. Like that's because that's the type of shit that starts drama.
That is the type of shit that starts drama.
That's so funny to me. I'm sorry. That just made me laugh because as an adult, like I can laugh at it now. But that is the type of shit that calls kids don't really have real problems. But that can create some problems in a kid's world where you think it's like the end of the world because like you chose two of your friends and then one of them gets excluded and it becomes this whole thing. Or like, I guess I'm not really your friend.
I guess we're not friends. I guess you like him more than me.
Oh man, that shit's so funny.
That definitely happens. But yeah, my dad, he was like, pick two friends. We'll go to the movies. We went to go see Biker Boys and Megan Good is in it. And that did things to me. I was like, holy shit. I was like, because I remember her on Cousin Skeeter. And
yeah, Megan Good is so pretty.
I don't know what happened. And then there's one other thing I remember from the movie. This is so random. There's a part where like they have like metal on the bottom of their boots. And so as they're driving the bikes, they like jump off the bike and they're like standing next to their bike as their bike is driving. And they're like scraping their feet against the ground. And there's like sparks coming out from the boots. Okay. Some really random
shit. Yeah, like some bullshit.
Yeah. Just some random shit. But anyway, this is so off topic. I just wanted to say that because you said the memory of you and your dad going to see the one movie. I have a memory of that. But yeah. I just thought of it.
So yeah, I think you know, this Netflix adaptation, just like all the other ones, it's not perfect. It's not even close to perfect. But I think that Avatar's world and Avatar's where it is in terms of how grounded it is, it's not Dragon Ball Z out there. I think that it works for live action. I think that this story can go. I think that if they didn't rush it, this could have been like a 7-season, 10-episode, hour-long thing, and it would have been fantastic.
If it doesn't get canceled, because the overall reception, which I don't understand, the overall reception is pretty negative.
It's really bad.
I don't think it's that bad. Like, I really do.
The way people are talking about it is awful. Like, they think it's one of the worst things ever. And I'm just like, bro, it's really not, though. When I watched episode one, I was expecting to go into this really horrible thing, like the M. Night Shyamalan one or like Dragon Ball Evolution. And when I saw the Fire Nation invade the Air Nomad Temple, I was like, wait, this is kind of fire. No pun intended. Like, this is I was like, this is actually amazing. Because at that time, episode one, I thought they were going to expand on everything like they did with that. Yeah. So I was like, oh, this is going to be like low key in some ways better. It's not. But that particular part is amazing. I thought that the whole show. Yeah, I was like, oh, the show is like this. Because part of the reason why I think Final Fantasy VII Remake is actually on par, if not better, than the original Final Fantasy VII for me, is because they actually expand on things from the original game. Like, the original game was made in, like, 96 or some shit. And
also, at that time, they made, like, a Final Fantasy a year.
Yes, which is fucking crazy. But like, at the time, you know, Final Fantasy came out, and the story of VII, the original one, like, I'm not the biggest fan of the original Final Fantasy VII storyline, to be perfectly honest. Like, it is not the most fleshed out, well-told story. I think Remake did a really good job of just expanding on the character development and the storyline of Final Fantasy VII. And just, like, the characters are just more robust. They're more realized in mm-hmm. the remake. Not just because of the graphics, but because their actual delivery of their lines and the dialogue and all that. Like,
they spend a lot more time on everything. Like, I always say, like, Jesse is so much more of a character in VII Remake.
It's a good example.
Whereas, like, Jesse's cool in the original, but in VII Remake, like, you really feel attached to that character when she, you know, when it happens.
When it happens. And that's the thing that got me. I teared up. I was in my room playing a game, and I teared up at some of the things that happened to the sectors. When you have to rescue those people in those sectors and stuff like that, I was like, this scene is amazing right here. The whole thing where the sector's on fire and you literally have mm-hmm. to go around. There's so many things. You're playing as Aerith and you're, like, trying to help people. I think that there are so many things they did. You didn't get to see that in the original. You just kind of go up the tower and then Aerith is up there. She's captured already and stuff like that. So, you know, not everything is better, blatantly, but there are things that they do that are better, in my opinion. And overall, I think that it might just be a better game. I'm still waiting to finish the whole thing, like, once the whole story's told and I compare it to the original. Because right now, it's just, I only played up to Midgar, which is the first game. I didn't play Rebirth at all yet, not even 1 second of it. So, you know, there's still a lot. But anyway, to the original point, I think that this is not as bad as YouTube and reviews have been review bombing it. I think that people are doing an overreaction. I think that people react to every Netflix adaptation typically with this kind of knee-jerk, it's awful thing. And surprisingly, though, the One Piece was so well received. Like, One Piece was insanely well received.
Here's what I think happens. I think it's just, we've talked about it before, but it's a groupthink thing. I think that with Cowboy Bebop, like, it all depends on what happens first.
Yep.
Cowboy Bebop, people got some initial bad reactions. Like, I think the initial thing was they didn't like Faye. They didn't like the fact that Faye was more covered up and she was, like, less sexy, right? That was, like, the initial thing. And then from there, every other gripe seeped out. And then it turned into, like, everybody hates Cowboy Bebop. And then, like, it got super, super, super trashed. When I think, outside of Vicious and Julia, I legitimately don't think it was that bad. Like, I enjoyed most of what I watched. Outside of Vicious and Julia, was the worst shit I've ever.
Yeah, really, really bad. But other than that, I did genuinely like that show. Like, I didn't think it was so bad that I would never, ever watch it again because it's that awful.
Not at all. And then One Piece, for one reason or another, the initial reactions on the internet were positive. And so I think that kind of just permeated through. So I basically just think whatever the initial reaction of the internet is, that becomes, that just explodes outward.
Yeah.
Netflix Avatar, one of the first things that came out was that, like, they made, like, a Twitter post, which I think was a mistake. I don't think they should have did this, but they made, like, a Twitter post saying that, like, they toned down Sokka's sexism and, like, changed a bit of his character.
I remember that, yes.
And they talked about, like, they talked about how they changed a little bit about Azula and they changed a little bit about Aang's motivations. And they made him more motivated sooner. So they said these things before the show came out. And so immediately people were like, why? Why are you changing the characters? Just, like, make the show. And so immediately created, like, a bad energy. So then when people watched it, it doesn't matter how fine or okay or good or whatever it may be. People immediately were like, yup, see, this sucks. I knew it was going to suck when I read Twitter. I knew this was going to suck.
Yeah.
And then that just kind of permeates forever. And then, like, everybody just continues to, and they don't realize they got caught in the fucking group cycle of the whole internet hating it. And that's what I think happened.
I think you're right. I think that's absolutely correct. So I think that that's pretty much everything I want to talk about, because it is just 4 episodes that we've covered so far.
Yeah.
Well, there's more
I want to say, but I'm scared because I don't know. I don't remember what happens in what episode. So, like, I've been holding back. I don't want to say something.
You've been letting me kind of lead, because that makes sense, because I'm bringing up things that I've literally seen. So, like, how about this?
The Iroh thing, I'm so happy you brought it up, because that's something I wanted to talk about, but I was like, I don't know when that happens. I was like, and it happens in episode 4. So cool.
So I can, how about this? We could follow this episode up with the very next episode of the podcast being the next 4 episodes, because I watched the first 4 and I'm kind of fiending to watch the next 4, but I don't want to watch them and then not talk about it. So
yeah. I'm down. Next episode, we can do this.
So yeah. So we'll follow up this episode. So back to back, which we usually don't do it this way, but back to back, we'll do, you guys got these first 4 episodes. And then the very next episode of the podcast will just be Avatar 5 through 8, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And then that'll be like the end that we could put this to rest. And then we can go back to like Yu Yu Hakusho, Dragon Ball, because I really want to get back to those as well. I had so much fun watching Dragon Ball and so much fun watching Yu Yu Hakusho as well, because I don't remember a lot of it. I watched it really young. So there's a couple things. I do want to get back to those things, but I don't want to go back to those before finishing off Avatar. I just feel like...
We can just knock this out and then we'll be good to go.
All right. So with that being said, let me pull up the Patreon people. I hope you guys did enjoy this episode. Thank you guys so much for the support. The Patreon has been growing steadily every single month, which is amazing. Don't forget, we do have the tournament April 6, 2024, where it'll be Edison Elementals. Your deck must contain one attribute. It is free to play if you are in the Discord server. You do not have to pay anything. And the prize pool, I believe, is already up to like $150. I've gotten donations from Frozen Soul, and I got donations from Bazaar, I think is his name. That's his dueling book name anyway, but he donated as well. I made an announcement in the announcements channel. BZVK in the Discord server, but his name on dueling book is like Bizarre, and I don't know how to say the other part of it. It's kind of hard, but shout out to both of them for donating so far. We are accepting donations. You can send them directly to our PayPal account, in which case YouTube doesn't take anything, or you could do a super chat, super thanks or whatever, and then YouTube takes 30% of it. However, whatever works for you, it's all the same. We put it into the prize pool. So, by the time we do this tournament, there's a chance that this tournament will be over $200 in prizes. And we usually always give 50% to first place. So it's really awesome. Just something we like to do to give back to the people who support us. And you guys on the Patreon are our biggest supporters. So again, thank you so much. That being said, let's give a shout out to Connie. Three Cart Cruise. I love that name.
Three Cart Cruise.
That is such a fucking good name, by the way. Three Cart Cruise. Bro, I can't wait to the next Monster Hunter. I want to hunt with you. Like, make sure... Yeah. Because the next Monster Hunter is going to be gigantic. Monster Hunter is called Monster Hunter Wilds, for God's sakes.
Oh, God.
It is going to be gigantic. And all of us are going to be playing it. I am looking forward to it. So, Cruz, we definitely need to have, like, you in our lobby at points. Me and Kenny, we obsess when we play Monster Hunter. Like, I take time off of work. I do a whole thing. Like, I love Monster Hunter. I cannot wait.
I just need it to not come out in the summer. The summer is my busiest time.
Yeah.
And it's like hard for me to take off in the summer. Like, I need it to not come out in the summer. Cause I just need it to not come out in the summer. That's what I need.
Yep. So Three Cart Cruise, Leon, Quest, Xavier, Hylian, Dimitri Barnes, Father Multiverse, Dom the Goat, Giovanni Avalos, Alex Flamer, Omri Reynolds, Dan Varable, Dennis Milburn, First to Home, Mitchell Niles, Vince Marquette, Dallas Bailey, KJ, Roz Weiss, Agents Over Tengu, Sarah Maria, Alexa Hearn, Philip Campa, Edison Club, Kyle Batelho, Guac is Extra, Sugal, Vicky Venomine, Elijah Barfalt, and then...
Tyler Tadeo, Volvi the Mega Monarch, Enraged Peacock, Janitor 215, Joshua Carroll, Eric Chai, Brian Moore, Ty P336 is the Soul King Baby, Gingerilla, Puke, Michael of the Illuminati and ENT Collectibles, I'm Just a Little Nasty Sometimes, Anti Did Nothing Wrong, David V, Nextastic, B-Dog23, Felipe Glenn, Hershey Bar, and Poister, Romeo Junk Synchron Snyder, Tyler Frasher, Sasha Egger, Daniel Anderson, Daroa, Owen Tedford, Noah Maudy, Chicken Toaster Strudel, Jordan Eastman, Robert Light, and Trainee Joey 182.
I think that Trainee Joey's new. I don't remember you saying that one.
Nope.
But yeah, shout out to Trainee Joey and Robert Light, the two newest on the Patreon. Thank you guys so much for support. Also, Daroa changed their subscription recently to an annual. So for people who don't know, if you do annual, you get a discount. So Daroa is in a party member tier, which is $10 a month. But if you do the annual, I think it's only like $100 a month or something like that. So you end up saving like $20 or around that amount. So annual subscriptions are really awesome. A lot of people did annual for the NPC tier. NPC annual is like $30 as opposed to like $36 if you pay it over $3 over the course of 12 months. So if that is cheaper for you, if that's better for you, then by all means, check that out. But again, thank you to everyone. I don't care what tier you're in. We really appreciate every single person who supports me on their podcast. It is fucking amazing that we've been doing this for almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years in like 3 months. And I'm hoping that you're enjoying the content. I'm hoping that you're enjoying the way we're digesting the content. We're getting to talk about the details more of all the shows that we cover now, because we're taking them piece by piece as opposed to just doing an entire sweeping season discussion in 2 hours. And it's like, there's no way you're covering all of a One Piece arc or all of a Yu Yu Hakusho arc or all of a Dragon Ball arc in one episode without missing a lot of it and just, you know, having to just skip certain parts of it. So, but with that being said, guys, as I always say, do the things that make you happy, including enjoying Avatar, the live adaptation, because it's really not that bad.
It's not. Don't let the internet hype/hate train cycle you in.
Yep. All right, guys, we're out. Catch you in the next one. Peace. Peace.